Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Dams are important for flood control, assuring navigation, and producing hydroelectric power. Dams can also bring risks. A particular kind, low-head dams, can bring an insidious and invisible risk. Some have called them drowning machines because they can pull boaters and swimmers to their deaths. Here to help us understand this infrastructure risk and how we might mitigate it are Roger Adams, who's president of the Association of State Dam Safety Officials, and Paul Schweiger, who's a member of the association and also vice president and dams and hydraulics section manager for the Gannett Fleming consulting firm. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Can you tell us about low-head dams? What are they? What's their design? Why are they constructed? And where do we find them?
Yes, certainly. This is Roger Adams. And I think it's important that we begin with a definition of low-head dams. It sort of varies from state to state. It varies among the federal agencies. And they're also called run-of-river dams. Generally speaking, a low-head dam is a dam that extends across a creek or a river from channel bank to channel bank and would create a reservoir that would be contained really by the channel banks. And the reason that we have low-head dams is for many purposes, I will say, currently used and used in the past. Currently, they're used for navigation, as you mentioned. Also, maybe to create additional water for a water intake for a water supply. And probably quite often is used for recreation. Creates a little extra water in the river or creeks for boating and recreational purposes. In the past, and we have a lot of historic low-head dams, they were used for power mills, for grist mills, saw mills, and that type of purpose. So we have a lot of historic dams, but we still have a lot of dams that still have a purpose. I'd say generally, Paul, that they're constructive concrete, masonry,
timber crib
type structures.
And let's go back a little bit, because the concept of low head may not be clear to all of our listeners. My understanding is what that means is that the elevation difference between the upstream side and the downstream side isn't very large.
That's correct. I'm glad you brought that up. Generally 15 feet or less. I'd say the majority of them are quite a bit less, 5 to 10 feet high.
That's right.
So why is that a particular hazard?
Well, it's a transient a hydraulic condition that is the biggest hazard. As the flow goes over the dam, during very low flows, it can be a very safe site. You can wade across sometimes the toe of the dam, and it's not very hazardous. But as the flow begins to increase, the flow over the dam changes, and it starts to create something called a submerged hydraulic jump. Some people refer to it as a hydraulic. So it's a little bit deceptive. It's a transient condition. So what might be safe on one day, if it rains over the night and then you go out the next day, the increased flow can create this hydraulic roller. And if the water continues to increase and the flow continues to increase, eventually that condition gets drowned out and it becomes safe again. So there's a window of flows that create this very hazardous hydraulic condition. Not to get too technical, but as the water flows over the dam, a couple things happen. One of the things that happens is it picks up air. So you'll often see foaming white water at the downstream face of the dam. And that means any objects that are in the water, when they hit that aerated water, they don't have the same buoyancy. You could even be wearing a life jacket, and it won't keep you above the water. because the density of the water is lower. So that's one factor. And, but the bigger factor is as the water goes over the dam, it plunges down and it creates a current, like a big eddy, a rolling eddy. And the telltale sign for this hazardous condition is if you look at the flow at the dam, you'll often see objects, floating objects trapped in there. They could be trees. Often you'll see buoys and just all anything that floats will often get trapped in that zone. So the water plunges down, it flows along the bottom of the river, and then it comes up. It looks like a boil. And some people refer that as a boil because it looks like a boil. And then there's a very deceptive current that flows upstream on the surface. So that a common problem is people that are boating from the downstream side, they get too close to this zone, and then their boat gets transported upstream, which is very unusual. It's carried upstream to the face of the dam where the water is plunging down. That will capsize the boat, and then it just becomes a recirculating current that you just get trapped in that, and even the best of swimmers can't swim outside of that kind of a problem.
I suspect the answer to this question is obvious, but is this a problem for large dams, for what we might call high head dams?
Generally, the large dams will have a spillway. It's a whole different energy condition. Like I said, this condition is a transient, and it's very deceptive because you look at it, it looks inviting. It looks like something you want to jump into and swim around. For a very tall dam, this transient condition, the window of flows is much smaller. You generally stay within the first state, a hydraulic jump that gets swept downstream much longer, and it's not as hazardous.
Yes, and I will say, larger dams pose their own, mm-hmm. safety at dam issues. Thrill seekers, might see that as a challenge, things like that. And they know they're taking a risk, generally speaking, at large dams. But these low head dams, they don't look as threatening as they really are on the surface. And to some that experienced boaters might think it's just like a riffle or they want to try something white water. But it's a little bit deceptive unless you really know the risk. These dams.
Yeah, and the other issue is access. These low head dams are everywhere. They're in neighborhoods. They're inside of densely populated communities. They're where people live. And the bigger dams are outside of the communities. So they're more difficult to access. They're better marked. In some cases, they're patrolled. So that's a big factor as well.
So in a sense, it's a kind of widespread attractive nuisance.
Yes, I'd say so.
Yes, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're across the United States and there are many of them.
And I will say, we have a lot more people using the waterways, a lot more boaters, a lot more access to kayaks, canoes. It's a great thing to get out and to use our waterways. But you have to know the risk and know the dangers.
Yeah.
And that's where, education on this would really help.
Roger, you're right on. We've been monitoring the fatalities and incidents, and especially kayakers and fishermen. Who like to recreate on these rivers, they're particularly susceptible. You don't need any training to get in a kayak and paddle around. And when you have one, you want to go out and use it. And what could be very safe one day can be extremely dangerous the next day.
Do you have data on the accidents and fatalities associated with these dams?
We're beginning to collect information, and it doesn't look good. It's a much bigger problem, I think, than anybody thought. So far, just mining available information, we know of at least 700 fatalities at low head dams in the United States. The more alarming problem is that the number per year is increasing, and we expect it to increase unless action is taken to change to solve the problem.
So this 700 number that you quoted, that's an annual figure?
No, that's a total figure, and that is not a total of all of the fatalities. Those are just the ones that we know about so far by looking at newspaper clippings and mining the internet and things like that. There's no national database or way to account for this. We're trying to change that as the committee I'm working on. We're trying to get better information. But I think last year, just monitoring states and trying to collect this information, there were about 50 fatalities at Lowhead Dams.
50 in a year.
Yep.
But then, as you say, you're using a kind of ad hoc data collection mechanism. It's not systematic.
No, that's right. And I would anticipate there are many more than that.
Are there state rules, regulations, policies, or policies at the federal level that address this risk?
It's a very good point. The state regulations for the last numerous years have really been based on the dam itself. We refer to it as dam safety. Is the structure competent? Can it pass flood flows? The dams are being inspected, things like that. ASDSO did a poll of the states a few years ago to see how many states actually had regulations for safety at dams, such as what we're talking about today. And unfortunately, only a few states have regulations that address this issue. And those states address the issue by requiring posting of signs, exclusion zones around these type of dams, providing portage around these dams, things like that. So that at this point, there's only a few states had that. Here at the association, we sort of recognize what Paul's saying. We have a lot more fatalities at these type of dams than we do with dam failures. And a few years ago, we wanted to tackle this. Paul Harris is the chair of our Public Safety at Dams Committee to look into this issue and see how the states can address it.
So it sounds like your association is really the center of activity in this particular area.
Yeah, there are other groups that are also taking an interest. The United States Society on Dams also has a committee that's working on this. And there's international interest as well.
So what's the response? What's the policy or the action that we can take to reduce this risk?
Well, I think that's a work in progress. We've had opportunity to present this case only recently before the National Dam Safety Review Board. And they're looking into it as well. One of the first things that we want to do is establish some standards for signing and putting buoys and creating exclusion zones so that people can be effectively warned as they approach these types of dams. And right now there is no national standard. There are all kinds of different examples of what people are trying to do. In Pennsylvania, if you look, they have a law that for Lowhead Dams on what the signage should look like and where the buoys should be located and things like that. So that's kind of a model state, but we need a national standard for all Lowhead Dams, and we're working towards that, and we are making progress there. I hope that is going to take off in a big way very soon.
Is there the option of modifying the design of these dams?
Yes, there is. Especially, there are many hazards at these dams. The one we're focusing on, talking about the most right now, is that hydraulic roller that occurs at the downstream face of the dam. And that's a unique condition that can be totally eliminated by modifying the geometry of the dam. There are many ways to do that. A common way is to put in very large boulders and infill the area to break up that roller. Other ways is to put in a step chute so that you basically have a stair step face. And it just eliminates or minimizes that roller from occurring.
So that one seems fairly straightforward to me, but then there's a cost associated with it, and somebody's got to pay the cost.
Yeah, and it's not insignificant. The other very effective way is to remove the dam. And we're learning there are a lot of orphan dams out there. These are dams that were built sometimes over 100 years ago, and nobody really knows who owns them. And so that's called an orphan dam. And those are difficult. People, it's historic. It is part of their heritage. It does create recreational value. But if there's nobody there to own it and be responsible for it and maintain it, Both are good candidates to be removed.
Yeah, and some of those are privately owned, or were privately owned.
Probably at one time, probably a grist mill or a power mill or something that, or navigation for like a canal system. And, these companies or entities no longer exist. And many of those structures are on what we call public highways or navigable waters of the states. So the actual state may own the stream bed where these dams are. And like Paul says, these dams without owners, in a lot of cases, such as Pennsylvania, they have went in and removed these dams.
So that seems like a good solution. That's a real solution, but it's hard to implement.
It's hard to implement. Like I sort of start out saying, that some of these dams still serve purposes, water supply intakes and recreation in itself. And I think you're right. And Paul mentioned that the dams that really do not serve a purpose and are creating these hazards are ones that we really need to tackle first.
This is, from my point of view, an interesting and surprising problem. You've really shed some important light on it. You've also indicated that there are things that we can do, a variety of things that we can do. It's a matter of stepping up and taking responsibility. Appreciate the fact that your association and the two of you have been leaders in this area. So thank you for alerting us to this. I know what to look for now, and I can be careful and hope other people will as well. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, there are resources if you're interested. If you go into the ASDO website, the late Dr. Bruce Shantz was the original champion, and he spent a lot of his career focused on this issue, trying to resolve it. And there's a website dedicated to his memory. And if you go to the ASDO website and type in public safety around dams, it really is the go-to place to get information on this important issue.
That's a really good piece of information, and we'll be sure to put that link on our website when we post this interview.
Yeah, and Paul and I really appreciate this interview because we are really trying to get the word out there, and we appreciate your time and efforts to make us.
Yep.
Well, we're grateful for what you're doing. Thank you very much, Roger and Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.